This podcast is sponsored by Merkle B2B, driven by data, enabled by technology, powered by creativity. We can help connect you with the right audience at the right place and the right time. Learn more at MerkleB2B.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, January 27th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. In the modern world, there's more than one way to fight a war. And cyber attacks are a threat that governments and businesses have to prepare for when international tensions rise. On today's show, how are companies around the world preparing for possible cyber warfare linked to the buildup of Russian troops along Ukraine's border? WSJ Pro cybersecurity reporter David Uberti joins us to discuss the risks and how companies and governments are shoring up their defenses. That's after these headlines. Elon Musk said Tesla won't introduce any new vehicles this year. Instead, the company plans to focus on scaling up production. Tesla brought in a record $5.5 billion in profit last year by increasing vehicle deliveries globally by 87%. Our reporter Rebecca Elliott says one key to that was the way Tesla reacted to the global chip shortage.
Tesla benefited last year from the in-house software engineering expertise that it has amassed. That expertise helped to make it more agile than many of its rivals at adjusting to shortages of certain parts and coming up with alternative plans. And so Tesla, in the end, was able to grow vehicle deliveries by 87% last year when the global industry grew by single digits.
On an earnings call with investors last night, Musk said he expects the company to grow by 50% in 2022. Musk also said Tesla would start scouting for new factory locations and likely make selections toward the end of the year. Intel also reported earnings last night. The chipmaker posted $20.5 billion in sales during the fourth quarter, up 3% from a year earlier. But profit fell by 21% as Intel ramped up investment in new plants and products. Staying with Intel, yesterday the company won its appeal of a 13-year-old $1.2 billion antitrust fine in the European Union. In 2009, the bloc's main antitrust regulator, the European Commission, accused Intel of squeezing out a competitor by using rebates and offering payments to a retailer on the condition that it only sell computers containing Intel's microprocessors. On Wednesday, a court struck down that fine, saying the regulator's economic analysis was incomplete and didn't establish the impact of the rebates or identify damages linked to Intel's practices. The EU's top antitrust enforcer said the commission would assess the judgment. An appeal is possible. A new report lays out how the chip shortage affecting Intel and other semiconductor makers is squeezing more companies. The Commerce Department said this week that U.S. manufacturers and other companies are down to less than 5 days of inventory for key chips. In 2019, companies typically had 40 days of inventory. Our finance reporter Julie Steinberg says that means one small snag can completely upend a company's operations.
So, for example, a single shutdown can ripple through the supply chain. If you have an overseas factory that closes in a company's supply chain for more than a few days, that can cause the company to exhaust its inventories. So if you have a disruption overseas, which might shut down a semiconductor plant for 2 to 3 weeks, that has the potential to ripple through and disable a manufacturing facility and furlough workers in the United States if that facility only has 3 to 5 days of inventory.
You can hear more from Julie on yesterday's AM edition of our sister podcast, What's News? And we report exclusively that Neil Young's music is being removed from Spotify. On Tuesday, the folk rocker sent an open letter asking his manager and label to take his music off the service because he didn't want it to be on the same platform as podcaster Joe Rogan, who Young says is spreading misinformation about COVID-19 vaccines. In 2020, Spotify signed an exclusive deal for Rogan's podcast worth more than $100 million. His show, No Stranger to Criticism, is currently Spotify's most popular podcast. All right, coming up, as tensions between Ukraine and Russia escalate, guns and bombs aren't the only weapons to be concerned about. We'll look at the rising concerns over cyber threats. That's after the break.
This podcast is sponsored by Merkle B2B. Curious to know how Merkle B2B can connect you with the right audience? It's not magic. It's the integration of data, technology, and creativity. Discover more at MerkleB2B.com.
For months, Russia's been gathering troops and military equipment along Ukraine's border. But Kyiv is concerned about more than just physical troops. Ukraine officials have blamed Russia for dozens of cyber attacks on government websites, and for using destructive malware on at least two government agencies. The Kremlin has denied involvement. Now, it's not just Ukraine that's concerned about these hacks. Western governments and companies with any ties to Ukraine are looking to set up protections for themselves. Here to discuss what those are and the risks posed by cyber warfare is WSJ Pro cybersecurity reporter David Uberti. Hi, David.
Hey, Zoe.
So there have been several attacks that Ukraine has blamed on Russia, but apart from these strikes that we've seen in recent weeks, has this kind of cyber attack playbook been used before?
Well, within the cybersecurity community, Ukraine is seen as sort of a testing ground for a lot of what Russia does with cyber attacks elsewhere, particularly against countries such as the US. There's been a long history of the Russian military or intelligence services targeting in on different Ukrainian companies or government computer systems in order to disrupt them at various points, particularly over the last 6 or 7 years as there's been a low-level conflict in the eastern part of Ukraine. The most historic one of these came in 2017, where the Russian military essentially started a wide-ranging global computer disruption, in part by targeting a small tax firm in Ukraine, hacking into their systems, hacking into their customer systems, and then essentially running rampant through many other systems connected to that around the world. That attack was known as NotPetya. The White House has said that's the most expensive cyber attack in history, and it's estimated to have caused $10 billion, with a B, dollars in damage globally to companies such as FedEx, the pharmaceutical company Merck, and any number of companies that have nothing particular to do with the conflict in Ukraine. So as we're analyzing some of the cyber activity we're seeing now against Ukrainian government computer systems, that is seen as the worst case scenario.
Right, that sounds like some pretty extensive financial damage. So who are the companies that are worrying now, that are raising the alarm?
I mean, first and foremost, the companies in Ukraine will feel the brunt of this. So the Ukrainian government has said that they are really taking this seriously. They're working with partners at NATO and Washington to really shore up their computer systems. Secondarily, companies in the United States that do direct business with Ukraine and particularly have digital connections between their computer systems, whether they're actual trading partners, for example, or if they have some sort of vendor relationship. So if I'm a company in Michigan or California and I use a piece of software that might be built in Ukraine or even used by a company or government agency in Ukraine, those are sort of the things that people are worried about. Those are some of the backdoors that hackers can take advantage of and really allow some of these cyber attacks that might be targeting Ukraine to actually open the door for much larger damage around the world.
Right. I mean, we've got this interconnected economy, and we've seen cyber attacks have ripple effects on businesses that weren't the initial target. Does that mean that there are companies that maybe don't realize they're at risk here?
Oh, certainly. I mean, we've had a succession of different cyber attacks that have really rippled out across different international borders and industries. There was the SolarWinds hack, which was targeting U.S. federal agencies, but actually ended up affecting potentially thousands of different companies. There was also a hack of a software provider known as Kaseya, in which thousands of its customers were essentially exposed to potential ransomware attacks. So the real question, if you're a company thinking about what is my exposure to Ukraine, you really have to think about some of these bank shot scenarios in which hackers who might know nothing about your organization try to take advantage of you either for geopolitical gain, to exert pressure on the US government in some way, but also just to make a buck by potentially installing ransomware or stealing your data and taking advantage of this conflict in Ukraine as a sort of way in.
All right, let's zoom out a little bit. You know, we talk about cyber attacks on this show a lot, but in the context of a possible war, how dangerous, you know, and potentially devastating could cyber attacks be?
Well, the worst case scenario that people often cite is hackers being able to flip the switch on the power grid. This has been something that has happened in Ukraine, and that would obviously be devastating for Ukrainian people now, given it's winter. It tends to be a pretty cold country. That would be bad. If you talk to U.S. officials, that is something similarly that they are worried about on the U.S. side of things as well. So the Biden administration over the last year plus has really focused some of its efforts in cybersecurity to shore up what it calls critical infrastructure. And that could mean pipelines, for example, that could mean airports, but that also means electric utilities, the places that we get our energy. In the worst case scenario, you would have some sort of disruption to the electrical grid, which is why you have so much attention being paid by folks in the cybersecurity community, and then also national security officials in Washington to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Have we heard from the White House at all on this?
The White House, you know, in addition to a number of measures with regard to export controls targeting Russia and sanctions targeting Russian officials, they have also said that, you know, short of a land invasion of Ukraine, if Russia tries to do something the White House sees as more of a minor incursion, such as a cyber attack, the Biden administration said it will respond to such an incursion in kind. President Biden gave a news conference last week addressing this issue. Here he is.
It's one thing to determine that if they continue to use cyber efforts, well, we can respond the same way with cyber.
Subsequently, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said that Russia has sort of a known playbook for using offensive cyber capabilities against some of its adversaries, and the U.S. reserves the right to respond to some of those acts of Russian aggression. And it should be noted here that while we often talk about the capabilities of countries such as Russia, China, and North Korea to disrupt other countries' computer systems, the U.S. also has considerable offensive capability in this regard. So while officials have not elaborated on what exactly they would do, what a sort of counterstrike would look like in cyberspace, they do have an extensive playbook for that sort of thing. So while White House officials have said that they could respond to Russia with offensive cyber operations, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency in Washington has also urged companies to really bolster their defensive. They sent out a series of alerts over the last couple of weeks, basically warning companies of Russian aggression. And they've subsequently warned companies that Russia cyber operations could actually target U.S. companies directly, depending on how all of this plays out.
So, David, should everyday Americans be worried about this?
I mean, it's always a few steps away from us. I think first and foremost, the folks in Ukraine are going to get hit hard by this, regardless of like the extent of which Russia goes after some of their cyber infrastructure. That said, if you're working for a major company in the United States, you should care about this. It could disrupt your day-to-day operations. It could lose you a lot of money, and it could wind your company up into what could be, you know, years of disputes with insurance providers in the future, trying to figure out whether, you know, you should foot the bill for something that happens in a quote unquote wartime situation, or whether the insurance provider should do so. So best to be safe rather than sorry and avoid a huge headache. That's why U.S. officials are really urging companies to harden their cyber defensive now rather than later.
All right, that's WSJ Pro cybersecurity reporter David Uberti. David, as always, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Zoe.
And that's it for today's tech news briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.